This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. According to the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport, women make up 40% of all sports participants in this country, while they get just 4% of the sports media coverage. And the coverage they do get often focuses on their appearance rather than their performance on the field or court. With sports fans abuzz with March Madness, we want to focus on the women who coach college sports, their relationship with their players, the administration, their fellow male coaches. Curiously, their numbers have dwindled since the enactment of Title IX. Their salaries still lag behind men's salaries, even if the teams they coach have a better winning record. We have a trio of guests who have joined us on Radio Times. They know a lot about college athletics, and let me introduce them to you. Here with us in our Philadelphia studio is Karen Weaver. She's an associate clinical professor of sports management at Drexel University, also interim program director at Drexel, and she's a lecturer at the University of Pennsylvania. Karen, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Great to be with you, Marty.
Also with us is Nicole Lavoie, senior lecturer in the School of I knew I was going to screw this up.
Kinesiology
at the University of Minnesota. Also associate director of the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport that I just quoted. And Nicole, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Also with us is Karen Borby, and she's in her 22nd season as head coach of the women's lacrosse program at Swarthmore College. And Karen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. To you, Karen, are you feeling March Madness?
Of course.
I mean, you're at a university, so how can you not, right?
Absolutely. And, of course, Drexel's disappointed they're not in the tournament. But absolutely, this is a great time of year if you love college sports. And, of course, everything about the NCAA comes front and center at this point.
Do you share those same sentiments, Nicole?
Yes, I am in the midst of filling out my brackets. And although I'm a little dismayed that the Tournament Challenge app for ESPN doesn't include the women. You have to go online and do your women's bracket via a web browser, but the men have an app. So I have to do that today still.
How about for you, Karen?
Yeah, I'm all set. I filled it out last night and ready to go, ready to watch.
Nicole, going back to you and something you just said about ESPN, that the women's bracket isn't on the app, that's sort of what we're talking about in this show today, the fact that women in sports playing high-level athletics seem to still be an afterthought. Is that true?
I'm not sure an afterthought, but they certainly don't get as much attention in the media as their male counterparts. There are 35 years of sport media research that show that compared to male athletes in men's sports, women get 2-4% of all media coverage. And that doesn't matter whether it's broadcast media, print media, or any form of media. And so, like you said at the beginning of the show, they make up around 43% of participants, but still today get 2-4% of media coverage.
Karen, let me turn to you. I mean, what is this, 2015? Why so little progress when it comes to the media coverage?
Well, you know, the media follow the crowds, and the crowds have been growing in certain unique circumstances. Certainly, if you went to the University of Connecticut and watched their women's basketball team, you'd have a hard time getting a ticket. I mean, it's a huge sport. But, you know, go over here to Drexel or Temple, and if you have a couple thousand, that's a big night. So the media has justified their lack of exposure because they say the numbers aren't there in the stands.
Do you think there's some truth to that, though?
Well, I think it's the chicken and egg thing, that you could either say if we promote it more, if we cover it more, then perhaps more people will come, they'll know about it. I think with the evolution of digital media, there's more of a chance of a level playing field for women's sports now than there's ever been before. But I still think it's in niche sports. I don't think it's across the board like it is on the men's side.
Karen, let me get you back in on the conversation. You have been head coach of women's lacrosse at Swarthmore College for 22 seasons. That's a long time. What is your life like? What does your job entail?
Well, Division III is a whole different world, and especially at an academic institution like Swarthmore. My world is probably very different than, you know, Nicole's and Karen's. We don't deal with crowds, period. you know, we're lucky if we get a couple people in the stands. And there's really no difference between the men and the women here. I mean, as far as, you know, who gets exposure, who doesn't, it's very equitable. So I don't have the same issues that the others do. But, I see it from other aspects. I see it, you know, growing from the club level in lacrosse and how many, you know, women versus men coaches are coming through the youth, the club system, and that's affecting our sport. But as far as my life day to day, no, mm-hmm. I don't see that inequity.
Would you,
which
if
is
you,
nice.
Well, I was going to say, yes, there are pros and cons to all of this, but would you, Karen, if you were, you know, 22 or 24 years old, would you have the career you have now?
No, absolutely not. I was thinking about that, when I was thinking about this program, you know, whether I would do the same thing again. I mean, I love my job. I'm very happy. I can't imagine doing anything else. But if I had to do it all over again, the way the job is today, you know, when I first got the job 22 years ago, I would say that, you know, 20% of what I did was recruiting and office management, and 80% of what I did was actually coaching and teaching on the field. Now it's flip-flopped. It's exactly the opposite. I spend more time now trying to recruit the student athletes to come to Swarthmore than I probably do with the ones that are here. And that's not something that I'm happy about, but it's just the way it is in order to keep my program alive and healthy. So I don't know if I would have been able to do that, if that's what I would have wanted. I wanted to teach. I wanted to coach. I didn't want to recruit and you know, office manage. I enjoy what I do because I love my institution. I love the kids that come here. But to do it all over again and, you know, have a family and some of the sacrifices that I had to make along the way, I'm not sure that I would have done it again.
Karen, you were kind of nodding your head. And she's talking about a Division III school.
Right. Because so you can only imagine what it looks like for a Division I program. And that's sort of been one of the ideas, that it's really tough to have a life outside of coaching. It's a 24/7, 365 world. And it's sad to hear that that's the way it feels at the Division III level, that it's less about coaching and more about the office and the recruiting. And I think that's unattractive to women who want to have a work-life balance at time. But it doesn't mean that the women are wrong. It means that perhaps the structure of the way we do college sports is wrong, that it's out of balance for everybody, both men and women. And perhaps we need to really look at that.
But if the focus is on recruitment, does that mean the focus is on winning?
Well, you want to attract the best students in your school because it brings great pride and it brings a lot of notoriety, because the media tends to like to cover winning teams and teams that advance, you know, deep into a tournament. So there's that incentive. And of course, professionally, it's rewarding to feel like you're seeing some success when your teams do well. Everybody enjoys it. The parents love it. The students love it. The coaches love it.
I mean, Nicole, it sounds like things have just sort of ratcheted up when it comes to competition. I mean, we're focusing on women coaches, largely coaching teams of women. But it seems like that is ratcheted up as well in terms of competition.
Yes, and I think Karen had a good point about recruiting, is that many college coaches at the Division III level are basically working as pseudo-admissions officers, because getting students in the door of some of these elite private colleges is really tricky. And so that's another role that many Division III coaches now have to fill. But yes, I do think it's ratcheted up, and this is tricky with two Karens.
It is.
Maybe I'll just say, we'll say Coach Karen and Karen. You know, this idea of 24/7, 365 days a year, and having a lack of work-life balance, this becomes a particularly unique barrier for females, because while this is also true for men, because still today, most women in many families are still responsible for a majority of the caretaking and domestic labor in the house. This becomes more of a barrier for women who want work-life balance and a family to maintain this career.
And again, you're nodding your head, Karen. Go ahead.
I am. And I look at somebody who I worked with briefly at the University of Minnesota, Brenda Fries, who's the head women's basketball coach now at the University of Maryland, has been enormously successful, has managed to do that, raising two children, one of which has had some significant health issues. And she's done it because her husband has been enormously supportive and agreeing to some of the child care responsibilities, some of the overnights and the long trips and that type of thing. And that has to be a really well understood part of the partnership that a team has like that.
Well, I'm sure some men listening to saying, yeah, well, hey, you know, I mean, you know, we also care about our children. We want to be home for their sports games and to help them with homework and all those kinds of things.
Yeah, and that it's, I think it's a negotiated partnership, but, you know, certainly we get caught up in the, wow, I'm going to be the head coach at XYZ institution, and all of a sudden we realize, well, if I'm not at this event on Sunday, if I'm not at this recruiting event this particular week, what does it mean for my program versus what does it mean for my family?
Karen, you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, that's really the hardest part is feeling pulled between two things that you obviously care very strongly for. You know, whenever I was at work, I would feel, oh, you know, I should be home. Whenever I was home, I should feel, oh, I should be at work. And there's really no way to settle that in your head, and you just have to do the best you can. And it's such a struggle. It really is. And I've seen so many of my peers leave coaching over the years to find a job that has a better life balance, whether it be at the high school level or in another area of athletics that isn't, you know, college coaching, because they, that struggle in their, that guilt that they felt every, in everything they did just took a toll.
So what would fix that, do you think, from your perspective, Karen? You're at Swarthmore, but what would make that balance more balanced?
I, at this point, I don't know if there is a solution, because the challenge is to be more and more competitive and more successful, and that's what's wanted out there by not only the administration but the athletes and the parents. I mean, parents right now are investing so much in their child in clubs and camps and instruction because they see that as their way to a college, not only just a scholarship, but just a college spot on a roster and an opportunity to play college athletics. And so there's this expectation of being somewhat successful once you get there. And I don't really know what the solution is. It's really at a point where to be a college coach, there has to be a sacrifice. There has to be, you know, like you said, either some sort of a relationship that is very, very balanced and, you know, even as far as the male and female or female and female, the caretakers, because one person can't do it all. It's just impossible.
Well, let's take
it. Can I weigh in on that?
You know what, Nicole? I was going to put a question to you, but the clock tells me we're almost up on a break, and I didn't want to interrupt you. So hold on to that thought. We're going to take a very short break, and we are talking about, broadly speaking, the state of women college coaches. The voice you just heard is Karen Borby. She's in her 22nd season, head coach of the women's lacrosse program at Swarthmore College. The voice you also just heard is Nicole Lavoie, and she is the director, or I should say the associate director of the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport. And also with us, Karen Weaver. She's the interim program director of the sports management program at Drexel University. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. Also, we want to hear what our listeners have to say. Send us an email, radiotimes at whyy.org. Send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times, and stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We're talking about what life and work is like for women who coach at colleges. And again, send us an email, radiotimes at whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Nicole, did you remember what you wanted to say?
I hope so.
Go ahead. We were talking about trying to find that balance between work and life when you're a college coach.
Yeah, and I think something that Dr. Weaver mentioned earlier about, let's look at the structure, the organizational structure of college athletics needs to change if we're going to make it easier for women and men to have a work-life balance. Because if you look at the practice times, or does an organization, does a school have on-site daycare that's easily accessed and maybe part of your salary negotiation? Can coaches travel with their kids and their spouse? Can they bring their kids to practice? Some organizations do, and some institutions don't. So these are the things that women are thinking about when they're trying to negotiate a work-life balance and make it work for them.
Let me read an email from Richard. He says, isn't the crucial point the money generated by men's college sports versus women's sports and the audience interest in men versus women's sports? Perhaps more men are sports fans and more interested in men's sports, and that's why they have all the money, they have all the attention, they have all the coverage. Karen?
Well, you know, that's sort of always been the $64,000 question, if you will. And yes, at the professional level, that makes absolute sense. But at the college level, fundamentally, athletics is supposed to be an educational opportunity available equally to all. And it doesn't mean every program has to be equally funded. They have to be equitably funded. But the opportunities are there because the colleges fundamentally believe these are educational opportunities. So should we get to a point where we just have a football and men's basketball team? That's certainly the hot debate right now. But collectively, that's not been the experience.
Let me pick up on something that I read and I included as I was introducing the show, which is that since Title IX, there has been a decline in the number of women coaches. From your perspective, Karen, what's the explanation?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. Number one, you always follow where the money's gone, and there's been more and more money put into coaching, put into programs, put into scholarships, resources, facilities, so that it's now attractive enough for men to want to go after it. And that's number one. Number two, men have been able to build up a longer history of coaching simply because they've started in the youth leagues and then continually to be present all the way through that process. So by the time they interview for a head coaching job in Division I and a female has interviewed, perhaps the male has had more head coaching opportunities, has had more opportunities to sort of prove himself or build his network. And that's something that I think is really coming to bear as we look at the hiring cycle in many sports, even traditional female sports like field hockey, for example. If you look at Division I field hockey, many of the programs still have a head coach as a female, but the associate head coach is oftentimes a male, and that's like the coach in waiting. So we're seeing this explosion of men coming onto the scene.
Nicole, I'd like to have you weigh in on that. I mean, is the goal that women should coach women, men should coach men, or that everyone should be able to coach everybody?
I think the idea is that as a coaching profession, what we'd like to see is that women have a legitimate dual career track available to them in a legitimate way, meaning that women can coach women and women can coach men. Because right now, 98% of male athletes are coached by men and 60% of female athletes are coached by men. So men have a legitimate dual career track in the coaching profession, while women do not. And I think one of the things that contributes to the decline of women coaches is what Dr. Weaver said, yes. But also, when we look at the barriers that women face in the coaching profession, it's not just about experience, because there are many females that have much more experience than their male counterparts and are not getting the job. So a lot of times I think, you know, we train them up and then they have nowhere to go, because even there's been a study by a colleague of mine, Janet Fink, and her colleagues. They looked at resumes and they blinded. The only thing that was different on the resume was the name. The qualifications were the same, and the men got hired more in the study than the women. So I think it's not just about experience. It's about other things going on within the organizational structure.
Karen, let me go back to you. As you said, more and more of your time is taken up in recruitment. What do you then look for in a good lacrosse player who can make it at Swarthmore?
Well, I think we're a little bit unique too because of our academic requirements. So I'll be honest, I actually look at their academic requirements more than I look at their athletic abilities, because they have to be able to get in. So, but I'm looking for a student athlete who wants the type of education that Swarthmore has to offer, because they have to be happy here even if they couldn't play, and someone who wants to continue their career as an athlete in college. So it's really the academics for me that comes first. But I'd say in Division III overall, you know, you're looking for a balance. You're looking for a student that wants to have a balanced life, which is actually nice as far as, you know, your own philosophy. If you want somebody who wants a full college experience, not just to play a sport and also go to class, even if it's a very good academic institution. You want someone who wants an academic experience and also wants to play a sport. So it's just a little bit of a twist on
sure.
that compared
sure.
to maybe the higher divisions.
Well, and I wonder, Karen, about some of those higher divisions. Well, I mean, we're talking about balance here, right, between being a student and an athlete. Does it get out of whack the higher up you go?
It does, I mean, because of the pressure to win. And so if the NCAA rulebook's going to let you practice 26 weeks a year at your sport, the coach is going to maximize every minute of that possibility. So, yeah, you do get this sense of all I have time to do is go to class and go to practice. There's really
right.
nothing outside my world.
Which is, I mean, this is a big problem that's gotten a lot of attention, Nicole. The money, I don't want to get sidetracked on this. We've actually done a number of shows about the NCAA, but the fact that they have so much money and the athletes that work for them. This may be a weird kind of question, but I wonder if the fact that women coaches don't get the same kind of money as men coaches, and perhaps the women athletes don't get the same kind of attention, does it allow them to be more of a student athlete because there isn't so much pressure on the athlete part of that configuration?
No, I think at most Division I programs, the female athletes are under the same pressures as the male athletes, maybe with the exception of football at big-time FBS schools. But I think you'd find that the male and female athletes are having pretty much the same experience across the board. What you're alluding to, though, and the fact that while there is more money coming into women's programs and in terms of being funded and scholarships, when you look at the data from the EADA, women's teams on average receive less money than the men's teams at most institutions, and women's coaches of women's teams, maybe not all females because we know 60% are men, the coaches for the women's teams on average make far less than the coaches of the men's teams, and that's largely because of inflated salaries for men's basketball and football that inflate the men's side.
I was reading some research in preparation for the show, and this will probably get your hair on fire, Karen. This is a CBS Sports College. Reporters posed a bunch of questions to some anonymous NCAA coaches. One of them said, a big part of being a college coach is molding boys into successful men. Obviously, a woman can't do that. I just don't see a place for it. How common do you think that is?
Mm. Wow. Did we just step back to the
wow.
1970s?
Well, apparently we did and we didn't. But the idea of a woman coaching men in college,
it's rare.
Sports.
In fact, in the NBA, we have one former WNBA player who's coaching on the San Antonio Spurs coaching staff this year, but there's virtually none. There's been a handful of women who've coached in some capacity on the men's side. But I agree with Nicole. I mean, you need a dual career path, and there really isn't one right now, and no chance of one that I can see.
Karen, we have an email from Anna. She says, it seems like women aren't entering the field of coaching. How do you think we can get more young women to consider coaching? Do you have advice for young women who are interested in coaching?
Well, one of the things that that I see is that a lot of girls coming up through athletics, they don't have a woman coach as a role model. And some of them mm-hmm. just don't think, realize that they can do that for a career. I was lucky. I had all female coaches as I was growing up. So there was no doubt in my mind I could be a coach. But it's amazing how many young athletes now, young female athletes, have never had a female coach. And I think that's probably one of the biggest barriers, is that there's just not an idea of, wow, I could do that. That could be a career for me.
Go ahead, Karen.
Karen, I really agree with that. I think it has really changed. And in fact, I think it's unfortunate that sometimes female athletes are asked when they have a coaching vacancy, you know, what do they prefer? And more often than not, they'll say, well, I've only known male coaches, so that therefore that's a better coach for me. And we're really doing our females a disservice by not giving them the opportunity, because men and women bring different kinds of skill sets. And we think that the more exposure they have to a variety of skill sets makes them a better player.
What are those different skill sets?
Well, you see on the men's side that, you know, they're very organized, they're very driven, they're very emphatic and emotional, but also they oftentimes lack the skills of being able to build a team and being able to appreciate the differences amongst women. The values that women bring to a team setting of what they want to get out of it emotionally and socially, not just physically and not in just terms of external objectives. So having that sensitivity on both sides, it, like in leadership and life in general, is a very important character, very important opportunity.
Nicole, can you weigh in on that?
Yeah, I think we need to be careful of saying that women and women coaches bring something different. I think because now we're getting into, you know, how do you really quantify that? I think what we need to focus on is that both men and women, depending on the coach, you know, because I know a lot of women coaches that are very driven and very organized. So we should be careful not to overgeneralize, you know, all women coaches are like this and all men coaches are like that, because we have a lot of individual differences. What I want to go back to what Coach Karen said is that what does differ is that women bring a unique perspective and experience based on the fact that our gendered and socialized experiences are different in the world. And girls desperately need female role models. Same-sex role models are really important for growth and development. And Karen's right. There are very few girls that get a same-sex role model. So they don't think about it. They don't see it. They don't see it as a profession. And I think that's a real sad reality that needs to change. And one way that I do think you get more girls involved, other than having a female coach, because we do know that girls and women that have had female coaches are more likely to go into the coaching profession, is that we need to encourage girls, hey, if you love sport, coaching is a viable career pathway for you. And at the highest level in Division I, it's quite lucrative. So, you know, I think we need to encourage young women to think about coaching as a profession.
Years ago, and perhaps this is almost a generation ago, I remember interviewing a male coach who had the responsibility of coaching a pretty high-level women's team. And one of the things that he said he had to get used to was the female players saying, "Sorry." So sorry. I don't know if that's still true or not.
Yeah, I think most top-level women coaches would say that we don't say that in our practice. You know, don't apologize for going hard for the ball. But, yeah, I absolutely agree with what Nicole just said. I think there's a range of personalities amongst men and women, but we get into that hard-driving, hard-charging personality on both sides of the equation, and I'm not sure that's the best way of using our resources either.
Karen Borby, can you weigh in on this as well? And even more personally about your approach to your players?
Well, yeah, I think one of the things that, just going back to, you know, role models for girls is that, you know, it starts really at the youth level. It's amazing how many fathers will step up to coach where moms just sort of say, well, you know, I don't really know enough. Even though I played, you know, maybe I shouldn't be the coach of my daughter's team, where, you know, a father is more likely to say, well, I played this sport, so I can coach this sport. And right from the start, there's that male figure that the young girls are seeing. And I think that's where it could start to change, is if, you know, you've played a sport and now you're a parent, why not coach? I mean, I coached my daughter's team through youth, and, you know, I've been to so many of the tournaments, and there's so many more fathers than there are mothers. And I know now, maybe not in the past, but now there's so many women who have played a sport, even if it's not in college, even if it's just in high school, that know enough to coach their daughter's teams, and that would be a great place to start.
I'm looking at
it. I agree.
Let me just, I just want to read something. I'm holding in my hand something recently in the New York Times. Four members of the Iowa women's field hockey team have filed a federal gender bias complaint against the school, saying that the firing of their coach undermined the team's competitiveness. This apparently was a very hard-driving coach. And the four women that have filed the complaint basically saying, we want this same kind of strong coaching. If a man was verbally abusive, as apparently she was, he wouldn't lose her job. She apparently did. Karen, I'm Karen Weaver. I'm looking at you on that just to add some complexity to what we're talking
about. Yeah, I tell you, it's really interesting to see the dynamics of this situation, because there have been numerous examples about how the male coaches on that staff have behaved at Iowa and how the female coaches have behaved. And the athletes stepping up and saying, this is what we came to Iowa for, is right. What's really interesting is we want to be pushed. We want to really be pushed to the limit of being able to get to our maximum skill set. This whole issue around bullying is really a tough one in coaching, because what one person perceives as pushing, another person perceives as being too much. And I think female coaches have to walk a tighter line than male coaches do. There just seems to be an understanding that almost nothing is too far on the men's side, but there is sort of a line on the women's side.
Do you agree with that, Nicole?
Yes, completely. I think women coaches face numerous double standards in terms of their behavior. And what Karen's alluding to here is what it means to coach. Like, if we think of a coach and the behaviors that go into coaching to be successful, hard driving, loud, aggressive, pushing athletes, these are characteristics that privilege male coaches. And when women enact the exact same behaviors, they're judged very differently than their male peers. And this case at Iowa is a really interesting case study of that.
No, go ahead, Nicole. Finish. There. No. Finish your thought.
Well, and I think these double standards that are in place in terms of women and their coaching behaviors is just one more barrier that male coaches do not face in the coaching profession.
Well, and I can also say, as the non-athlete here, or certainly the non-coach here, is I think that's true in the non-athletic world as well. I mean, the hard-driving boss is called all sorts of names.
You know, and I think about it, too, from a perspective of a parent. And, you know, a parent seems to be more protective of their daughters than they do of their sons. And if their daughters are having a difficult experience, they're more apt to act on it than their sons are having a difficult experience with their coach. And I think we have some of that at play as well.
Let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Karen Weaver. She's an associate clinical professor of sports management at Drexel University, where she is interim program director. Also with us is Karen Borby. She is head coach at the women's lacrosse program at Swarthmore College. Nicole Lavoy is the associate director of the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport at the University of Minnesota. Taking a very short break, opening up the lines at 1-888-477-9499. Again, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Nicole Lavoy, Karen Weaver, and Karen Borby, and we are talking about the state of women college coaches. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Karen Borby, we have an email from Chris for you. Chris says, when I was a Division I athlete in the late 1970s, our peak season practice and training time demand was about 20 hours a week. Now some sports require 35-plus hours of practice and training. I don't know if that's true at Swarthmore, but would you say that just the time spent working on a sport for a student athlete has increased over the last couple of decades?
Absolutely. I played Division I lacrosse, and I probably spent about the same amount of time training for my sport as the girls do now at Division III. So I think it really has changed. You know, there's much more expected. There's much more, you know, to do. There's more film to break down. There's more game plans to make. There's more, you know, practices to run through. It's just the changing environment of the competition. It's definitely increased.
You've seen that as well, Karen Weaver.
Absolutely. And, you know, even in like preseason, the preseasons are, you know, three weeks long, and they can go up to 6 days a week and up to 10 hours a day. I mean, the time commitment is substantial.
And you're seeing that as well, Nicole. And I mean, is there any way to dial that back or any reason to dial it back?
I think the train's left the station on that one. There would have to be a major policy change or a rule change at the NCAA level that would have everybody doing it unilaterally. But at the Division I level, I don't think we're going to see less. We're only seeing more. And so it would have to come from the organizational structural level if change will happen.
We have an email from Gary. Says, would a formal attempt to improve fairness in the larger media sports industry and increase the amounts of coverage of women be productive? I guess the idea, Karen Weaver, that if the focus were on the – or greater focus on the professional women athletes and perhaps even their coaches, that that might trickle down to the college level.
Well,
does it work that way?
I don't think so. I think, unfortunately, the media industries are profit-generating enterprises, and they're going to follow wherever the eyeballs are. So they're going to see what drives, site clicks on the app or viewing on the Sunday afternoon watching a golf tournament. Simply, people have time and time again proven they want to watch in more volumes mm-hmm. men's sports.
And because it's more, they're more used to it, it's more exciting, it's more interesting, it's more dramatic.
All of the above. All of the above. I mean, there's a longer storyline, there is a historical understanding of the rivalries that exist. You look at professional football in this city and people understand what the Eagles-Cowboys rivalry means, and they were brought up understanding that. We've come to understand what the UConn-Tennessee rivalry is like in women's basketball, but that's only been recently. So there's not this long-term, generational kind of perspective on it.
Let me see what CJ from Audubon has to say. CJ, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I think this is an interesting conversation because it's kind of dancing around our society's attempt to try and make men and women identical. I think men and women are equal in value. Men are not better, women are not better, certainly. But, we're not exactly the same. We have different, general strengths and weaknesses.
Sure.
And not to say there aren't exceptions. And I think this is a problem that it's going to be very difficult to solve until you address those differences. And I'll give you for instance. It was chauvinistic for the male coach to suggest that men should be coaching men, but it's okay for the female panelists to say that women need to have same-sex role models in their coaching situation. I just think it's a difficult problem to solve.
That's fair enough. And if I can just sort of quibble with you a little bit, I don't think we're talking about being identical because clearly, CJ, we are not identical. But I think equality is probably something we could all sign in on. But let me give you a chance, Karen Weaver, just to respond to his comments. And it's an important one.
It is. And I appreciate the phone call. And I think one of the things that we're trying to do is say we'd like gender to not be the factor at all. We'd like not to see gender, just provide the best possible coach for that environment as possible. And I don't think we're at that point yet.
Nicole, do you want to weigh in on that? Do we have Nicole?
I think she got it. I mean, nobody's saying men and women are the same. But when we're talking about having more women in positions of power in terms of coaching, and we want to see more women on TV and the sport media, I think we have a long ways to go before we're reaching gender equality.
Karen Borby, do you want to weigh in on that?
Well, again, in my world, I don't see it as much because we're not talking about marketing. We're not talking about crowds. But I do see that, one of the things that's really important that I see at our level is that when men coach a women's sport, that they're not trying to mold the girls to be men. They're trying to coach them as women, just as a mm-hmm. woman would coach a man's sport, not try to make them into women, trying to coach them as men. And I think that seems to be the biggest challenge, to coach the group that you're coaching for the group that you're coaching.
Fair enough. CJ, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let's see what Nan from Denison University has to say. Nan, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
First of all, I have really appreciated the conversation. Karen Weaver, as usual, you're doing an outstanding job, as are the entire panel. I wondered about the concept. I think, Karen, you are correct in that we're not at the point of not seeing gender. I certainly have experienced that firsthand. But I also believe that women have to continue to communicate in terms of how we are developing other women and become a little bit neutral in terms of developing leadership characteristics. I've seen a case where we tend to eat our young, or we'll see head women's basketball coaches always having a male on staff. versus perhaps maybe a less experienced woman or taking more risk on women. Men certainly take risks, and like someone made earlier in a comment, if there's a position vacancy, a male that might have been to, a bowling match is qualified to bowl. A woman needs a resume of 4 pages long to be able to even send in her resume. So
sure.
I'm wondering how we could further encourage, destroying our young, but in fact nurturing the development of leadership and using those leadership terms in neutral. Well, probably not gender specific.
I hear you, Nan, and I appreciate the call. And you know, eating your young is such a such a vivid image. I've heard that before. I mean, you know, women can be. I don't know. I won't even say it. But go ahead to you, Karen Weaver, but I'd like to hear from the rest of the panel.
Well, one of the pieces of Nan's comment that I would like to address is that, and I'm seeing this now across Division I athletics, is that I think when it's a female head coach, I think she's given less latitude in managing her staff than male head coaches are. Whenever there's an issue in the staff, it feels like athletic administrators get more involved in the managing of the personnel issues or the personality issues that exist in that than they ever would dream of getting involved on the men's side. And I think that undermines the head coach. And that's an issue that fundamentally gets to leadership. If that person's going to be in charge, let them lead. If they need to make a decision and change coaches, then they need to make that decision. They shouldn't feel compelled to hire a certain staff just because someone else thinks it's the right thing to do.
Nicole, do you want to weigh in on that?
Well, I think the mentoring of young women, the caller Nan's comment is, yes, we definitely need to do a better job of that, and there are some organizations that are really trying to address this. NACWA, which is the National Association of Women's Athletic Administrators, are trying to mentor young women up through the system as athletic directors. The Alliance of Women Coaches are trying to mentor young women and help each other and develop a network. Because what we're really talking about here is developing a strong, supportive, and sustainable women's network where women support other women, just as the men do. Men support men, but we also need male allies to mentor and support young women, thinking about hiring women. And I think there are some really great women coaches out there. We're talking about basketball because it's March Madness, but Muffet McGraw at Notre Dame, Tara Vanderveer at Stanford, they do a really excellent job of mentoring young women on their staff. Pat Summit, you look at their coaching trees, and they have a lot of young women now who are in the coaching profession, and we need more women to do that.
Well, Karen, you're a coach, so let me hear from you as well.
Absolutely. I think that is the key. We have to be advocates for ourselves. We started a symposium in our conference many years ago, and it's such a success. Eleanor Snell, Jennifer Schillingford, we started this symposium in our conference to encourage the student athletes to see college coaching as a viable career option. And it's been going on for, I think, about 12 to 15 years now. A couple students from each school in our conference come together for a weekend. It's run by all coaches from our conference. We talk about everything from how to plan a practice to, dealing with parents, dealing with all kinds of ethical situations, trying to explain and help them learn what it's like to be a coach and empowering them to know they could be. And it's amazing how many of those graduates of that symposium have gone on to be coaches themselves. So it works. The model works. We just have to have more of it. When they're encouraged, when we're advocates, when we hire assistants that are also women who then go on to become head coaches, that's how we can work to get this better.
Karen Weaver, let me put this to you, and it's hard sometimes to take an anecdote and decide whether this says something about the sport in general, but Shannon Miller, she was ice hockey coach at the University of Minnesota at Duluth, lost her job, an extraordinarily successful coach. I think there's no getting around that. One of the reasons was that her salary was too high. There are also questions about homophobia and sexism and all that. What is there a takeaway from an incident like this?
Well, it's sort of, it's an odd situation. I understand that the university, it may be in some budget issues, they were looking for ways to cut. But, you know, she had achieved a level of excellence that most smaller schools like University of Minnesota Duluth would be chasing after. And it's puzzling to say that, well, we're going to let you go, number one, because your salary is too high. Number two, you haven't been as successful in recent years. Well, the reason being is that the other schools took note and leaped ahead of her. Now, they have the financial resources in order to do that. And she had pointed that out time and time again to the administration. So the curious question will be, well, who will they hire and what level of support will they give? And do they expect to get back to where they were? Because they may never see that again, you know, and I think it's an interesting dilemma.
Let me get, looks like Kelly from Morrisville to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Kelly, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I've been coaching for about 7 years currently, and I've been coaching anywhere from basically kindergarten up through the high school level. And there's two things that I've noticed during my coaching time. One is that the parent support for female coaches is something that I think is waning, and I see a lot from the male parents. The female parents that I've connected with seem to be very enthusiastic that their daughter gets to have a female coach, but it's not all that uncommon that I've had experiences where I've had fathers come up to me, speak to me about the game, give me advice, volunteer to be an assistant coach, even when we've had basically championship seasons or even seasons where we've built very successful seasons from where we've come down from being the underdog. So I think that's one thing that's always been something that's a focal point when their daughters see that sometimes they don't have the support from their male father figures for female coaching. And sometimes I wonder the impact on that. And the other thing that I see as well is that basically the other coaches supporting female coaches. I primarily always coached in leagues where there's been a very small or limited amount of female coaches. It's always been male dominated, and I don't expect that to change anytime soon. However, I've also come into basically any type of basketball gym, and I've seen the looks I've gotten from other coaches, especially from the male side and also from other female coaches. So I think there needs to be more of a support from coach to coach, regardless of gender. And also I'd like to see that switch from the female and male side.
I hear you. No, I appreciate the reason I jumped in is I'm looking at the clock here. We're almost out of time. Karen Borby, as a coach, I'd like your response to our caller, Kelly.
Absolutely, I agree. I was kind of chuckling when I was listening because it's true. There definitely seems to be, you get questioned more, I believe, as a woman, you know, by parents, the male parents saying, you know, did you think of this or how about this or did you try this? And that it's definitely something that I don't feel goes on. I don't see those same male parents going up to a male coach and saying that. So I agree. There is definitely that double standard there. And it's frustrating. I can imagine staying and coaching at the other levels, at the youth levels and the middle school and high school levels can be very challenging. You have to be very strong.
Do you have a final comment, Karen Weaver?
I really agree. And if we fundamentally don't address the issues that the parents have towards female coaches at that level, it's going to be hard to address some of the larger issues.
Oh, interesting. We do have to end our hour. But first, Nicole, I have an email from Carrie. She says, just a shout out to Nicole Lavoie, my former tennis coach at Wellesley College. Phenomenal coach, role model to women athletes, fun, inspiring, the absolute best of all my former coaches. Thanks, Nicole. That's to you.
Wow. Thank you, Carrie, if you're still listening. What a nice way to end the show.
Well, Nicole Lavoie, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
It's my pleasure.
And she's the Associate Director of the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport, and that's at the University of Minnesota. Karen Weaver, thank you very much. You've joined us in the past. Always a pleasure. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
So glad to be with you.
And Karen Weaver is an Associate Clinical Professor of Sports Management at Drexel University, Interim Program Director at Drexel. And Karen Borby, thank you very much as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. She's head coach of the women's lacrosse program at Swarthmore College. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out much more about this program, including how to download a podcast of the show. Kevin Griffin and Diana Martinez, the engineers for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens with Quinn Libson. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.